Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Hello and welcome to episode of the Global Solution Series, Workplace Transmission, Navigating the Minefield of Occupational Safety and Health During the COVID-19 Pandemic. My name is Jocelyn Johnson, and I am an associate in the Ogletree Deacons Atlanta office, and my primary practice area is workplace safety and health. And my co-host today is Rebecca Emery, and I will let her tell you a little bit about herself.
Hello, I am Rebecca Emery. I'm an associate in Ogletree Deacons London UK office. And I specialize in employment law and data protection. So I'll be talking a little bit about the data protection implications as we go through this podcast. So I think we're starting out today by talking a little bit about what constitutes a COVID-19 outbreak or cluster, as the CDC refers to them, and what that means for employers. So I guess the first thing for us to say on this is that across jurisdictions, there is no standard definition of what a workplace outbreak of COVID-19 is. So right here in the UK where I am, our National Health Service has defined an outbreak of COVID-19 in the workplace as two or more laboratory confirmed cases of COVID-19 that are linked to one employment location. I understand, Jocelyn, that the CDC says something fairly similar for the United States. Is that right?
That is correct. So the CDC has generally said that they refer to it as a cluster, is two or more cases connected in time and place. So very similar to, like Rebecca said, in the UK, how they are classifying an outbreak. And I think that that's mostly important because there are going to be some jurisdictions, for example, in the United States, where whether you have an outbreak of one employee or a cluster, an outbreak of two or more employees is going to determine different requirements. And a great example of that is in Illinois. There are some reopening guidelines in Illinois for retail establishments. And in that guideline, it suggests that if you have a single employee reporting a case of COVID-19 symptoms, that employer should encourage the employee to contact a healthcare provider. But if you have multiple employees, in that case, two or more, reporting COVID-19 symptoms to you, then the employers really should be notifying their local health department. And for Illinois, they say for COVID-19 symptoms being reported, that should be reported to the local health department within 3 days. But for employees who are reporting actual positive cases of COVID-19, then they should be notifying their local health department within 1 day. So you're going to have jurisdictions where if it's more than one employee with a positive case of COVID-19 or suspected case of COVID-19, your requirements for reporting, your requirements for disinfecting the workplace might be a little bit different than if you just have one instance of a COVID-19 positive or suspected case. And another great example of that is actually in India, where they distinguish between smaller and larger outbreaks and with regard to disinfecting the workplace. And in India, if you have only one or two cases being reported to you as an employer, the disinfection procedure is actually pretty limited. You only have to clean places and areas that were actually visited by those one or two cases in the past 48 hours. There's no need to close the business or stop work. And you can kind of resume, normal operations after you have disinfected that area. But if you have a larger outbreak, and they don't define larger outbreak, you could assume that if it's more than one or two cases, then you actually have to close your business for 40 hours and do a thorough disinfection of the workplace. And all staff during that period should be sent home to work from home until that building has been thoroughly disinfected. So again, employers should really be considering how certain jurisdictions define clusters, outbreaks, for those, possibly two or more cases, and what the corresponding requirements are for disinfecting the workplace, reporting, et cetera.
Yeah, right. And I think that's a theme we're going to see right throughout this podcast, actually, is that differing jurisdictions have different requirements and definitions and local requirements will vary, which segues quite nicely on to notification requirements and whether employees are obliged to tell their employer if they've had COVID-19 or tested positive for COVID-19. Interestingly, right here in the UK, we've actually just had legislation passed that makes it a criminal offence for employees to fail to notify their employer if they have tested positive for COVID-19 and have to self-isolate, which is, I think I'm correct in saying, the first time it's ever been a criminal offence for an employee not to tell their employer that they've had a notifiable disease. We have previously had requirements in the UK for employees to notify their employer if they've been exposed to a contagious illness or they have a contagious illness, but this is the very first time this has ever been a criminal offence not to tell your employer that you have a contagious illness. So this is brand new for COVID. The sanction is fairly limited, but employees who are told by our health authorities here that they need to self-isolate, that they have tested positive for COVID-19, who do not tell their employer this and try and show up for work regardless, will face a £50 fixed penalty notice fine. As soon as they are notified that there is an employee in the business that has been required to self-isolate, the employer is then placed under a duty as well to prevent that individual from attending work for the quarantine period. And again, I think this is unique to COVID. We've never seen employers face criminal sanctions for not excluding an employee from the workplace. So employers now could face a fine at the first instance if they fail to exclude a COVID-positive employee from the workplace of £1,000. And that will rise per breach up to a potential £10,000, and the employer could be taken to court for potential further sanctions under health and safety legislation as well if they were to be continually in breach of this obligation. So employers and employees both have to know now that in the UK, if you have a positive COVID test and you are told about this, there is a legal duty to be exchanging information, which contrasts a little bit with some other EU countries. So places like France and Germany, particularly within the EU, are very sensitive about employers asking employees for any health information. So an employee may report sick for work, but you are actually in those countries not allowed to ask your employee what is wrong with them. It may be that if they're sick for more than 4 days, you can ask them to talk to your company's medical provider and talk to a doctor and discuss what ailment is causing them to be away from the workplace, but you can't actually as an employer ask what is wrong with an employee when they call in sick. So that does place a bit of a difficult situation for employees and employers. Sometimes employees will choose to volunteer the information. They might choose to say why they can't attend work, and in that case there's no problem with that information being voluntarily handed over, but employers can't ask unless an employee is actually physically turning up to work, at which point employers in most EU countries may ask if an employee has had COVID symptoms. Critically, what they can't ask is, do you have COVID-19? But you can ask, do you have any symptoms that are indicative of? At which point, if an employee says yes, they can be excluded from the workplace. But again, there are nuances even within Europe as to what employers can and can't ask employees. And I think, Jaslyn, we're seeing something similar in the USA and perhaps in Canada and other federal countries, where even between states, we might see differences in what employers can and can't ask. Is that right?
That's right, Rebecca. And I'll just mention, I mean, for the most part, I mean, the UK is very, very interesting, that the idea of, you know, classifying as a criminal offense, failing to notify your employer if you are required to self-isolate and have not done so, and kind of, you know, the obligation being transferred to the employer for keeping employees who are positive out of the workplace. That is, you know, the first that I have seen that sort of classification as a criminal offense. But what is more common, as Rebecca mentioned, is, you know, employers requiring employees who are coming into the office to kind of go through things like temperature checks and sending workers home when they are exhibiting symptoms of COVID-19, asking workers to report to their supervisor if they're feeling sick at work, or questionnaires, again, before employees are allowed to enter the workplace and before employees are allowed to return to the workplace after they have exhibited symptoms. And of course, test for COVID-19. And of course, these vary across jurisdictions. But in the U.S., these are the sort of kind of screening methods that have been commonly used by employers to kind of make sure that you're not, you know, allowing COVID-19 to enter the workplace. And this is true, again, for other requirements when there is workplace transmission. We've talked a little bit about our employees required to report cases of COVID-19 or suspected cases of COVID-19. But I want to turn a little bit to what are the employer requirements. If an employer is notified by an employee, whether it's mandatory or voluntary, that they have experienced symptoms of COVID-19 or have tested positive for COVID-19, is there an obligation for that employer then to report to certain authorities, whether that be local health departments, things of that nature, or other agencies, for instance, in the U.S., the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And I will turn it over to Rebecca to kind of give her perspective in certain jurisdictions, such as Europe, New Zealand, and in Colombia.
Yeah, I think what we have here is a real split between countries that place an obligation on employees to self-report to the authorities if they have COVID-19, diagnosed with COVID-19, and those that require the employer to do so where they have a COVID-19 outbreak. So in the UK, employers are not under an obligation to alert the authorities to a COVID-19 outbreak in their workplace, because the way that our test and trace system works is that, in effect, employees will have self-notified, because in order to get a COVID-19 test from our National Health Service, you have to declare that you have symptoms. And as soon as you declare that you have symptoms and require a COVID-19 test from the National Health Service, your details are then entered into the government's track and trace system, which means that in theory, should put together, oh, hang on, we've had two or three employees from one particular workplace report that they have symptoms and require a COVID-19 test and then have either negative or positive results. And so the track and trace system should, if it's working correctly, and I will caveat that with if it's working correctly, should put this together. And the theory is that the government will do that work and the employer doesn't then need to tell government what's going on, because the system, if it's working already, lets them know. Similarly, in Ireland, the situation is quite similar over there. To get a COVID-19 test in Ireland, employees will go to the Irish health executive, and their track and trace system should alert the government to any COVID hotspots that are happening within workplaces. However, slightly differently in Ireland, employers there are required to keep a track and trace log in-house of which bubbles of employees are working together, so that should the Irish health executive come to them and say, we think there's been an outbreak of COVID-19 within one of your facilities, the employer will then have these logs to hand over to the health executive, which will tell them exactly which employees have been working together and in close proximity, and will enable contact tracing that way. So there's a slightly different requirement there. The contrast to that we're seeing is places like New Zealand. New Zealand have opted for a government-run app-based track and trace system. And so where workplaces are physically open in New Zealand, one of the requirements, the legal requirements to physically reopen a workplace, is that the QR code, a unique QR code, will be set in each location and will be displayed prominently at entry and exit points. And every member of staff who goes in and out of that physical workplace has to scan the QR code on entry and exit. And this uploads to a government database and allows contact tracing should there be an outbreak within the employer's facility. And if employers are found to have defaulted in our obligation to place these QR codes around their physical locality, their workplace can actually be shut down by the New Zealand Health Authority. So they're taking that really seriously. Places like South America, perhaps with slightly less technology available, We're seeing a sort of obligation to manually report to health authorities. So Colombia has taken the approach that if an employer suspects an outbreak of COVID-19, and they don't, helpfully don't necessarily define how you would suspect this, but you know, I guess this is based on employers being told by employees, I'm COVID positive or I can't come to work because I have COVID. They are then under an obligation to report that to the health secretariat so that they can take appropriate action. And in that case, in Colombia, it looks like the appropriate action may be deemed to be shutting workplaces to disinfect them where they think they have a cluster like that. So, yeah, we're definitely seeing a split again. And again, I think within the US, Jaslyn, we're seeing some split between different states as to how they handle this.
Yes, Rebecca, you're right. So there are going to be two kind of, when you're thinking reporting in the US, there are going to be two things you should consider. One, both federal OSHA and state plan OSHA states. So this is the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, as well as public health authorities. And with regard to public health authorities, there are definitely a split between whether or not in a particular state an employer has to report suspected and or confirmed cases of COVID-19 to local and state health authorities. And there are several states. I actually recently did a 50-state survey looking at this issue that do require reporting. And several of those states actually have enforcement mechanisms where if an employer fails to report, it can result in both civil and criminal penalties, including fines and jail time. So employers should really look at where their operations are taking place. They should look at, you know, state reporting requirements, particularly to public health authorities. And you have to look both at the state level, but also in the U.S., you have to unfortunately look probably at the county level too. But those are some considerations that employers should be thinking about. And like I mentioned earlier, there's also the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And under at least federal OSHA, there are reporting requirements. COVID-19 is a reportable illness, and thus employers are responsible for reporting COVID-19 if certain elements are met. And those elements are, one, you have a confirmed case of COVID-19, so you're not required to report suspected cases of COVID-19. And the second element is determining whether the case is work-related, and that is in an investigation that the employer is going to have to undertake themselves to determine if the case was a work-related transmission or if it was transmitted perhaps outside of the workplace. And the third element is that the case must result in either an inpatient hospitalization within 24 hours of an exposure at work or death within 30 days of an exposure at work. So again, two kind of reporting requirements that possibly may arise in the U.S. from state to state. Besides the USA, you also have other places like India and Korea who also have certain reporting requirements. And I thought India was particularly interesting because there is a requirement to report, but it also talks about how once you report, the public health authority might do X or Y depending on the severity of the symptoms reported. So in India, when you have at least one or even a few people who share a room or a close office space and are found to be suffering from COVID-19 symptoms, the employer must report to the state health authorities. And once reported, the central or state health authorities will perform a risk assessment, and they will essentially designate other measures that the employer should be taking, whether it be disinfecting or additional other measures, maybe testing. And that will all be based on whether or not the symptoms, as they define them, are very mild or mild or moderate to severe. So those are things to keep in mind as well. You have to report, and then also, keep in mind that once you do report, that public health authority may come back to you based on the symptoms that were reported and require an employer to do a number of different, protective measures as determined by that public health authority. Now, beyond, informing third parties, whether it be OSHA, whether it be authorities, employers also need to consider how and if they can report to other employees in the workplace when they have a COVID-19 positive case. And I'll let Rebecca kind of start us off here with kind of the general principle and how it could be possibly a little bit more difficult to do this in EU countries.
Yeah, so there's a general principle. I don't think there's a jurisdiction which would fall out with the general principle that employers can give employees the information that is necessary for them to protect their health. That goes hand in glove with an employer's general duty to look after the health and safety of their employees in the workplace. And it's generally a fairly uncontroversial thing. However, I did warn you earlier in the podcast that I'm a bit of a data geek, and this is why they've got me on here. In EU countries, we have the General Data Protection Regulation, which makes life a little bit more complicated when you are dealing with information related to employees' health. Any health information about an employee, whether that's their temperature registered on a particular day or whether that's they've been given an official diagnosis of COVID-19, is classed as sensitive personal information under the GDPR, which means that it has to be handled with the highest degree of confidentiality and sensitivity. So an employer in the EU who is told by an employee, I am COVID positive or I have COVID symptoms, is then in a place where they are caught between two duties, the duty to protect the sensitive personal health information of the employee who has tested positive for COVID-19, and the health and safety duty that they owe to any other employees who might have been exposed to COVID-19 as a result of the particular employee's infection. Now, for a little while, it wasn't entirely clear what data regulators were going to do to help employers to balance these two duties. For quite a while at the start of this pandemic, rather helpfully, data regulators pretty much said to employers, use your discretion as to how much information to give out. But thankfully, the EU Data Protection Board, which is the EU-wide body that deals with these kind of things, has now given some guidance. So as a general principle across the EU, if an employer finds himself in a situation like this, the information they can give out to employees is that there has been a suspected or confirmed case, depending on what the case is, of COVID-19 within the workplace. They can tell employees who are affected that they may have been exposed to COVID-19 or have been exposed to COVID-19, depending on the situation the employer finds themselves in. But what they absolutely cannot do is give away the identity of the individual who has been infected with COVID-19, because to do so would be to give away their personal health information. And obviously that would be a breach of the principles of the GDPR that are there to protect people's sensitive personal information. So employers in the EU, generally speaking, I think have been taking this approach from the beginning. Having said that, there are some other jurisdictions that take a slightly different approach to this and perhaps even impose requirements that would be somewhat counterintuitive for those of us looking at it from an EU perspective. So Jaslyn, I'll ask you to talk a little bit about those.
Yeah, thanks, Rebecca. So I think similar to the EU, most countries are saying, you know, of course you should inform employees if fellow employees have been exposed to COVID-19 in the workplace, but should maintain, you know, confidentiality. I think where there's a slight difference is, you know, in the EU countries, it's pretty absolute that an employer should never identify the person who is COVID-19 positive. Whereas in other countries, and I think a good example is Australia, again, employers are required to tell employees if they may have been exposed to COVID-19 in the workplace, and where possible, you know, they should try to do so without revealing the details of the infected employee. But actually, the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner has put out guidance that says, you know, if it's necessary, employers may disclose an infected employee's name on a strictly need-to-know basis. And they don't really define what a strictly need-to-know basis is, but they say essentially that it look at the public health authority and what COVID-19 essentially is, how it's transmitted, and based on the information given by the public health authority, if an employer makes it a determination that in order to prevent further transmission, it is necessary to reveal the name of the infected employee, the employer may do so. So that is a difference that you may see in countries outside of the EU. And in the USA is, again, a little more, they don't particularly say, if you need to disclose an infected employee's name, go ahead and do so. But generally, they say that employers should, but are not required to inform other employees of a possible exposure to COVID-19, and generally say that they should maintain confidentiality as required by the American with Disabilities Act, the ADA. So I think that those are two kind of highlights of where you might have jurisdictions that are not as absolute in terms of never, ever, ever should you disclose the identity of the infected employee. And that should be something that employers should consider and look into in terms of, where they may have a little bit more leeway when doing when informing employees of particular circumstances where they may have been exposed to COVID-19. And next, Rebecca and I want to talk to you about some practical tips that employers can use to prevent workplace transmission when it comes to COVID-19. The prior discussion was mostly focused on when you had your measures in place and unfortunately COVID-19 got into the workplace, what's next? Next, we'll talk a little bit about what some jurisdictions are recommending or requiring in terms of measures that we can use to keep it out of the workplace. And so we don't have to kind of confront these issues of reporting both to employees, authorities, et cetera. And I will turn it over to Rebecca to start us off.
So on a practical level, at the moment, certainly where I am in the EU, we are seeing what they are calling the second wave of this disease. And that means that a lot of jurisdictions are already saying to employers, if your employees can work from home, they must do so. So I think that's the first thing to say is for all employers, consideration should be given to whether your employees really need to be in the workplace when this virus is out there. Now, unfortunately, of course, there are some jobs that just cannot be done from home. Some industries, manufacturing, various other sectors need people on the ground to do their jobs. And where that is the case, and essential workers have got to be in the workplace, employers need to have a look at their health and safety plans. And they've got to ensure that there is a good COVID-19 safety plan in place. Some jurisdictions, Australia and New Zealand in particular, I can think of off the top of my head, require that these COVID-19 safety plans are actually registered with local health and safety authorities. But pretty much all jurisdictions require that physical workplaces that are reopening have COVID-19 safety plans written down. Another thing that most jurisdictions require now is consideration of how and when you get staff into the workplace. So can start and end times of shifts be staggered so that you don't have large groups of employees congregating? Can you segregate employee groups into bubbles so that the same people always work with one another and you don't have a risk of transmission across an entire workforce should one individual come into work not knowing that they have COVID-19? The other thing is, right now, Jasmine and I are doing just this. We can't get together face to face anymore. So where possible, can you use digital means of meeting rather than having people in a room together? Anything to try and prevent people from congregating and possibly transmitting the disease through the workplace in an uncontrolled manner. And the big one for a lot of businesses right now, and I know this can be a struggle, but business travel is pretty much off the agenda. You can't restrict employees' ability to travel in their personal lives in most jurisdictions. I know it has been a frustration for some businesses that employees do seem to still be taking foreign holidays where that's been legally permitted, and yet they can't be asked to travel on behalf of their employer. But as it stands, it's inadvisable in pretty much most jurisdictions around the world to try and get employees to travel internationally, certainly on behalf of an employer. And even within Within individual countries, I know that traveling across state boundaries, for example, in the US and Canada can be a bit difficult. I know Australia have placed restrictions on who can and can't travel in and out of certain states. Closer to home in the UK as well, Wales is in a lockdown where people can't move 5 miles beyond their point of origin. So really considering whether travel is essential and limiting that to all remains possible. So those are the sort of measures that are required to try and keep people from mingling once they're in the workplaces. But I think Jasmine's going to talk about what measures can be taken when people are actually sat down in their offices and what employers can do to keep them safe once they're there.
Yeah, thanks, Rebecca. So again, I think there are a few things that some jurisdictions actually require. So definitely want to check your local requirements. But a big one is contact tracing. We see this a lot in retail establishments and other businesses where either you have to have something in place, and some jurisdictions actually have contract tracing applications. And it's been seen around the world. Most of these seem to be recommended and not mandatory, but there are a few jurisdictions around the world where you're required to have certain measures in place. And I think earlier, actually, Rebecca mentioned New Zealand as one of those jurisdictions where, you know, people are scanning barcodes before they go into certain establishments. And that's their way of kind of doing some sort of contact tracing. And beyond that, there's also, again, like Rebecca said, once you're in the workplace, what can employers do to keep employees safe? And one of the huge things that I think probably all jurisdictions require in some shape or form is social distancing. And the distance is going to vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but there are certain methods in place that employers can use to kind of serve as visual cues to help employees. This is a new normal. Employees are not used to having to keep distance from their coworkers. And some of those methods might be signs. I know I have recently been in grocery stores and the like, where there are arrows on the floor and circles that say stand here, and there's 6 feet between me and another person waiting to check out at the register, things of that nature, as well as physical screens, whether that be used in cubicles in an office space, whether it be at the beginning when you're entering the workplace where you have employees screening other employees and doing temperature checks, to having a big plastic screen dividing the employees while those type of screening methods are taking place. There are a variety of different methods in place, and each jurisdiction usually has measures that they recommend and or require that employers should be reviewing. And beyond that, of course, to the extent whether it is post having a COVID positive or before there is an exposure to COVID in the workplace, you want to have an enhanced cleaning measures in place. And those can be, a number of different things. But I think that the important thing is to recognize, particularly after there has been a COVID exposure, what are your jurisdictions requiring? Like I mentioned earlier, in India, whether it is a small exposure versus a larger exposure, two or more people, that's actually requiring a business to close down and disinfect. So make sure you know what those disinfecting requirements are in your jurisdiction and how they may differ depending on exposure versus non-exposure or how big of an exposure it was. And beyond that, I think another huge one that, and I think it's in probably most jurisdictions these days as well, is the wearing of a face mask. And I actually recently came across, particularly in Australia, I think it was Victoria, actually. The Victorian government is now requiring all Victorians to wear face masks, which is not unusual. There are a lot of jurisdictions that require this. What I did find interesting about that is now they're requiring fitted face masks that actually have to cover the nose and mouth. So that means that face shields and bandanas and scarves, which were previously permitted, are no longer considered a sufficient face mask in Victoria. So definitely when you're looking at jurisdictions, look at if face masks are required, where is it in the workplace, is it on public transportation, etc., and the types of face masks that are sufficient. I thought that was a very interesting distinction that Victoria made, and it may be a trend to come. And on that note, actually, I will say, please, if you're interested on global face mask use, you should check out episode 17 of the Global Solutions podcast, which discusses global face mask requirements. So you can kind of take a look at that. And then I believe in about 20 minutes, they do a quick overview of some global requirements that employers should be aware of.
I think that all that remains for us to say now, guys, is thank you for listening to this episode of the Global Solutions podcast. And if you are interested in more updates on the COVID-19 situation as we roll through these crazy times together, please tune in next week.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.